Father, Son, and Spirit, we are so grateful to be able to gather here together this morning to just be with one another, catch up on our weeks, to look forward to the school year that lies ahead. God, we're grateful to gather to sing these songs and be reminded of this truth of who you are and what you've done for us. We're grateful to gather here to open your word and for you to speak to us through these ancient scriptures. We ask, God, now that you would, in fact, speak. We know that you are here and alive and active and moving already. And so would you tune us into that? Would you give us the eyes to see and the ears to hear? Would you soften our hearts to what it is you want to say to us this morning? And as we often pray, God, would you give us the courage today to respond to what we hear in whatever ways we may need to respond? We pray this all together in the name of Jesus. And everybody said, amen. You may have a seat. And if you have a Bible, you can meet me in Galatians chapter 2. Galatians is towards the end of your physical Bibles, if you have one of those, or you can look it up on your phone, follow along on the screen as well. As you're doing that, let me introduce myself. My name is Steve. I'm the lead pastor here. I've said this the last couple of weeks. I want to say it one more time. My family and I had the privilege, the gift of being on sabbatical for 3 months, May, June, and July of this year. And so August, we've been getting back kind of into the routines of regular life, harder than I anticipated it to be, but really good. And again, tomorrow we'll really be back to real life with our kids going back to school. But we are so grateful for the gift of that time and for each of you who helped lead and serve and sacrificed in a lot of different ways to make that possible, whether that was Marla or our staff team, our deacons and elders, and so many others who made that possible. Let's give them a hand one more time for all of their work over the summer. Really appreciative of that. One other thing, or I guess sort of two other things that are very related that I wanted to share with you. You know, over the summer, we always do this 4th of July event, and the city wants to, like, give us an award for it. So that's pretty cool. Like, in a couple of weeks, we'll go to some ceremony and get a thing. But I think a lot of that is credit to Jason and the team that he puts together to make that possible. And I think it also speaks to, we've been doing it for like 10 years now, the impact that has had, the relationship that it's established with the city of Davis is a pretty cool story here. And then over the last couple of weeks, we've been collecting backpacks for students at Montgomery Elementary. And I think there's a picture, maybe, of me and Marina dropping off the backpacks, about 45 backpacks we dropped off on Wednesday. And as always, the school is just super, super appreciative of that, and that's going to help a group of students get off to a really good start this year. So thank you guys for the sabbatical, for your continued generosity, not just to us, but to our city and our community here in Davis as well. All right, Galatians chapter 2. We begin today in verse 11. We're going to go through verse 21, finish up chapter 2 as we move towards 3 in the next couple of weeks post our last church in the park. Just a couple verses to get us started. When Cephas came to Antioch, I here is Paul, the author of the letter, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. For before certain men came from James, and if you're like, what are these names and places? And I don't have no idea what's going on here. We will create the context. So just hang with me for a moment. Before certain men came from James, he, Cephas, used to eat with the Gentiles. But when they arrived, he began to draw back and separate himself from the Gentiles because he was afraid of those who belonged to the circumcision group. The other Jews joined him in his hypocrisy. There's a big word, a heavy word. They joined him in his hypocrisy so that by their hypocrisy, even Barnabas was led astray. Again, we're going to get into who all these characters are and what this means here in just a moment. I want to begin with this, though. When my wife, Amy, and I started to date, there should be a picture of us long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. When we first started to date 20 years ago or whatever it was, we were kind of early to mid-20s. We'd been in a couple of relationships before, and so both of us had this, like, okay, if we're going to date, We're not going to play games. There's no games here. And so for me, one of the things that that meant was like, okay, let's get in a fight. We need to get in a fight and find out how that's going to go and what that looks like so that we can figure out if this thing is going to work, because we don't want to mess around here and you know, waste our time, so to speak. So all the time, I would be asking, are we in a fight? Is this a fight? Do you want to fight? And believe it or not, Amy found that to be pretty annoying. You know, we'd be like trying to figure out where to go to lunch, and it'd be like, do you want a sandwich or do you want tacos? And it'd be like, well, I don't know, I kind of want to, and it'd be like, ooh, are we in a fight? Like, no, we're just trying to figure out where we're going to lunch. Now, my approach was, I think, very immature and definitely super annoying. But the impulse behind it, I think, was very good, because the reality is you are not in a true relationship. And this is not just a dating thing. This is any community that you are a part of. You are not in a true relationship until you have gone through conflict. Right before that, it can be sort of pretending. And then when you have to deal with conflict, that's when it becomes real. Now, we're a couple weeks into this journey through Galatians. A couple of big themes, I think, have emerged for us so far. We've seen that the author of this letter is this guy named Paul. Paul is very passionate, right? His tone is a bit pointed in this letter. He's fired up because the Galatians are being duped into believing a lesser or a false gospel. Paul himself, as part of this undermining of the gospel, Paul himself is being attacked. And so Paul strikes this tone that is at times very abrasive and confrontational. It rubs against the grain of nice culture that oftentimes dominates churches like ours. Paul's passion, though, does not just stem from the fact that he's being attacked personally. Again, he's most passionate here because of the deeper issue that's at stake. These lesser gospels, which he calls no gospel at all, are robbing these churches in Galatia of the grandeur, the bigness, the glory of the true gospel of Jesus Christ. Now, within all of this, there is a very real, practical, thorny issue in the midst of all of this. And this was not just a Galatians thing. It was many of the early churches had to wrestle with this, but certainly the church in Galatia was at the forefront of this conversation about the inclusion and integration of Gentiles. The church emerges. Jesus was Jewish. The church emerges from this Jewish culture, but now it's like, hey, this is for everybody, everywhere. And so all of these people can be involved, but the question becomes, how Jewish does someone need to become to join the church? And Paul, in particular, his mission is to preach the gospel, the good news of Jesus, his death and resurrection to the Gentiles. And part of that is, hey, you don't have to do all the stuff. You don't have to jump through the hoops. You don't have to become Jewish to join this thing. It is, again, for everyone, everywhere. And the case that he is making in this letter is that this Gentile inclusion is the logical conclusion of God's redemptive work in the world. This is what God has always been about. Go all the way back to the beginning. Go back to Genesis chapter 12, the choosing of Abraham to be a blessing to all the families of the earth. And you follow that thread all the way through to Jesus and the commission that he gives to his followers to go make disciples of all nations. This is the logical conclusion of God's redemptive work in the world. Everybody, everywhere. The good news of right relationship with God through the death and resurrection of Jesus is for everyone, everywhere. But what was happening in Galatia is that some were coming in and saying, well, yeah, but also it'd be really great if you did this, or if you followed these laws, or if you ate this kind of food. And they started adding all of these things to it. I introduced this sort of formulation to us last week, but they were basically saying, you need to behave like us and believe like us, then you can belong with us. And I think that in our day and age, 21st century American church culture is similar, maybe a slight difference. We say you must believe like us, then behave like us in order to belong like us. But in the kingdom of God, it looks like this: belong, believe, behave. That deep sense of belonging, being a part of the community, learning what the community believes, then leads to that belief, which then produces good behavior. Now, sometimes when I introduce this formulation, belong, believe, behave, there's a sigh of relief. There's this kind of like, I can do whatever I want now. And think about the logical conclusion of that for just a moment. If everybody just does whatever they want to do, what's going to happen? It's going to be conflict. Certainly, in our cultural moment, we've been trained to demand belonging on our own terms. And any questioning of that is perceived as an attack on my belonging. But both of these things, hey, you got to do what we do, act like us, and then you can belong. And then this other kind of perspective of like anything goes, we just do whatever we want. Neither one of those is a healthy community. Are you with me? That's not the kingdom of right relationships. What we do matters. Our behavior matters. Behavior comes at the end of that formulation, but it's not a hierarchy or it's not something that's irrelevant. It is the outflow. Good behavior is the outflow of a deep sense of belonging and right belief. And so in order to have a healthy, functioning community, good behavior should be affirmed and misbehavior should be corrected. But correction is hard to do because it means conflict. Right? It means conflict. Today, in the second half of chapter 2 here in Galatians, we get into a major conflict between two significant individuals. Let's look at it again. Verse 11, when Cephas came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. Now, that's about as direct a form of conflict as you can get. Right to your face, you're wrong, buddy. Now, the two characters here are Paul and Cephas. Cephas is another way of saying Peter. This is the Peter, right? This is the Peter who was with Jesus as one of his 12 disciples, who was actually one of the three kind of core inner circle disciples. This is the Peter who betrayed Jesus but then was restored. This is the Peter who stands up in Acts chapter 2 and preaches the first big sermon that kind of sets off the whole church movement in the first place. If there was ever somebody to be nervous about having a hard conversation with, I think Peter would be at the top of that list. And yet, Paul goes right into it, and I think this is a key thing. He goes right to his face. Right? This isn't behind his back. This isn't, you know, through other channels. He just goes right to his face, and he says, dude, you're wrong. Now, what exactly did Peter do that was wrong? Now, Paul's going to get into some theology here in the second half of our section in chapter 2. We're going to hit that just briefly because that theological argument just kind of flows into chapter 3. So we're going to hit that part of it much more deeply in the next couple of weeks when we get into chapter 3. But today I want us to focus on the interpersonal part of this. Because again, this is where a lot of the like nitty-gritty hard work of church comes. How do we move through these moments of disagreement where we're not on the same page? How do we handle conflicts? Now, the question here is, okay, so Paul is upset with Peter, tells him to his face, but what exactly is it that Peter does that's so wrong? What's at the heart of this conflict that leads to this confrontation? Paul names it, right? He says it's his hypocrisy. Peter is being a hypocrite. And the form of the hypocrisy is this. Peter is being like all down and cool and inclusive of Gentiles when he's in a Gentile crowd. And then when he's with his Jewish friends, he's being all elitist and exclusive. And so this creates confusion, right? Now, anytime there is a thing, a division in a group of people, there's always that person who tries to play both sides. You've probably seen this and experienced this in different ways. We certainly live in a moment where there's all kinds of divisive issues that separate us. Let's consider for a moment one of the most divisive issues of our time. Does pineapple go on pizza? That was a little early there. That's okay. All right, so I can feel the energy in the room ticking up already. Okay, so there are some people who say, yes, pineapple on pizza is like one of the best things ever. And then there are other people who are wrong. There are some people who love to experience joy and other people who don't want to. Now, so here's what Peter is doing, right? Here's what Peter is doing. When he's with the pro pineapple crew, he's eating that pizza. Oh, this is so good. What a great idea. We all love to experience joy. We're eating pineapple on our pizza. But then he goes to the anti-pineapple crew, and it's like, can you believe those people? That's so gross. Hot fruit on pizza? And what is the deal with Canadian bacon? Isn't it just ham? Right? And so Peter is playing both sides of this, and it's deeply problematic. Now, that was silly. Let's get serious here for a second. This is deeply problematic because, first of all, on what I would call the more surface level, it lacks integrity, right? He's being two-faced. But I think even deeper than that, more important than that, his hypocrisy creates confusion. This is one of the big, I really hope this is one of the big takeaways for each of us this morning. Peter's hypocrisy is creating a confusion that undermines the mission. His hypocrisy creates confusion that undermines the mission. Now, modern Christians, we love to call out sin, right? This, you're doing it wrong. Don't do it like that. That's on the bad list. You're messing up. You're blowing it in this way. And yet, I think that's only half the work, right? So we cancel Peter for being a hypocrite because hypocrisy is bad. That's on the bad list of things that we're supposed to avoid and not do. But I want us to think for a minute about, but why is that such a problem? What's the thing beneath the thing here? It's deeply problematic because of the harm that the hypocriticalness does to the mission of God. If this good news really is for everyone everywhere, and you are being inclusive over here, and then you're being exclusive over there, that is mixed messaging that misleads people. One of the people who is misled is this guy named Barnabas. If you know the story of the early church, Barnabas was one of the key leaders. Peter's behavior is misleading one of the key leaders of the church. If what he is doing is throwing Barnabas into are we cool with the Gentiles? I'm not sure, because Peter's doing this, but then he's doing that. And if one of the key leaders is this confused, we'll have a problem. We have a problem. It harms the gospel, and it impedes the mission. And so Paul says, "This we got to stop. This has got to be stopped." Now, a couple of important layers to conflict. This is not personal or personality driven. Okay, this is not Paul saying can't stand Peter and his dumb face. Right? This is also not preferences. I like pineapple on my pizza. I don't like pineapple on my pizza. This is deeper than that. This is about the gospel, the good news of Jesus being harmed by a key leader's misbehavior. And these are important distinctions, right? Is this a personality conflict? Is this just a preference thing? Or is this about the mission? And sometimes, there's overlap and they can kind of bleed into each other. But again, this is the hard, nitty-gritty work of community. Do we just have a personality conflict? Just kind of rub each other the wrong way? Got to figure out how to deal with that? Is this just a preference thing? I like to do it this way, and you like to do it that way. I have this system, you have that system. We can kind of come to a compromise on that. What cannot be compromised, though, is the heartbeat of the mission of God. Paul is saying, if this really is for everyone everywhere, you cannot pretend that it applies here and it doesn't apply over there. We have a problem here. There are times in a community, in a healthy church, where we need to have a good fight. We have to face conflict head on because of what is at stake, the mission of God. Now, I have to preach a lot of sermons. And I'll be honest, like, there are times when I'm, you know, doing this and I'm like, this is for that person. Or, you know, this is good stuff, but I'll think about it some other time. And then there are times when you're working on a sermon and you're like, oh, this is for me. This one's for me. And so what I want to do for just a moment is just a little bit of what I call pastoral confession. I'm not great at conflict. I would be really great at conflict if it was one at a time. Right? Like, if you could just do this one and then move on and then do this one and move on, I would be so good at it. But what happens is that I'm involved in multiple relationships here at church, coaching teams, my kids' stuff, my extended family, and lo and behold, there's oftentimes more than one conflict happening at any given time. And that is hard for me. Right? And so I give my attention to whatever one I feel like is the most important in the moment, but what that oftentimes does is the other ones come back to bite me later on because I didn't deal with it when it should have been dealt with. You know what I'm talking about? Now, I hope, anyway, that I've grown in giving myself some grace in this, but there are a couple of moments that I replay a lot. A couple of critical moments, I think, in the story of discovery, at least since I've been here, where I look back and I'm like, man, if I just had a little bit more Paul energy, that could have been really helpful in that moment or in that conversation. There was a moment very early on in our time here, I think maybe like month two. And I'm going to share a couple stories, and these are about people that aren't here anymore, so don't be looking around trying to figure out who this is about. There was a moment about 2 or 3 months into it when one of the elders at that time pulled me aside and said, hey, you know, I give more to this church than anybody else. And so you need to really pay attention to what me and my family have to say when it comes time to make decisions. And I was like, what? There was another moment about a year later with a small group leader. We were in a conversation, and this was around, this was like in 2020, around the time of George Floyd and some other things that were happening in our country. And we're in this conversation, and this person said to me, like, the most racist thing that I've ever heard anybody say in my presence. Like, I've seen movies, I've heard stuff, but never, like, in the room. And, I mean, I had the, like, cartoon character jaw drop moment, right? There was another, this was with a staff person who was fundamentally not on the same page with our mission. Our ethos, the way that we do things here at Discovery. And rather than sort of own up to that, tried to kind of do like an underground alternative thing off to the side. And I think back to those three moments. And I handled them, you know, in different ways. Like that first one, I did say, like, I don't think we're gonna do that here. Like, I don't think money buys you decisions here. And I think I said the right words, but it wasn't the right tone. You know what I mean? Like, that should have been a, like, no. Nope, shutting this one down right now. And similarly with that second one, I look back on that one, and I'm like, man, what a moment to really say something about, like, hey, we don't say that here. We don't talk about people like that here at Discovery. That's not going to fly here. And with the last one, I did what I often do, which is, instead of, again, confronting it head on, it was more like, I just need, like, one more conversation. Well, I'm going to cast a little bit more vision. We're going to read another book. We're going to study another story about Jesus, and then it'll click. They'll get it. And I think what actually needed to happen was, no, No, not here. We're not doing that here. Or to paraphrase Jesus, right? Not so with us. In hindsight, I look back at those moments and I think, man, just a little bit more, again, Paul energy might have been really helpful, might have actually helped us move our mission forward quickly, or quicker, if you will. There are these moments where the misbehavior must be called out for the sake of the mission. Now, Paul's story here, I think it sets an example for us to aspire to, but it's also a very extreme thing. My intention this morning is not that we start confronting each other, you know, all like, but there are moments, right? There are moments where this is needed. And again, I think the big task for us in community is that discernment piece. Is this just a personality conflict? Do you just kind of rub each other the wrong way? Is this a preference thing? You want to do it that way? I want to do it this way. We have to figure out how to compromise on that. Or is this truly about the mission? And what's at stake if we compromise on our mission? Now, at the end of chapter 2, Paul says, and this is a verse that a lot of people, you know, have kind of as their like life verse, right? Paul says, I have been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I now live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. This is very central to the larger theological point that is flowing here through the end of chapter 3. But this is also, I think, the secret to having a good fight. The cross is the key to moving through healthy kingdom of right relationships type of conflict. It can be very easy when we get into a heated situation, when we get into a conflict conversation, it can be very easy for us to enter into that from a self-righteous place and to become defensive, and the conversation becomes about proving that we are right and proving that the other person is wrong. And so we must always filter these moments through the lens of the cross. Asking the question, am I seeking here to justify myself, or is this Christ who lives in me? That's an easy question to ask in a sermon. That's a really challenging thing to work out in real life, right? Am I seeking to justify myself, or is this Christ who lives in me? I want to give us just a couple very simple, what I call guide rails for handling conflict. First thing, I think, is to be humble. Remember some of the backstory, right? Paul had gone to Jerusalem to meet with Peter and James and some of these other key people who are named in the passage today. Remember, he goes there to submit to their leadership, to say, hey, look, this is what God has called me to do, and this is the message that I'm preaching. Does it line up with what you guys think? And they have this big conversation, and it's this conclusion of like, yeah, like we don't want to do anything to impede the Gentiles being included in the church. Really, the only stipulation they put on it is don't forget to take care of the poor. Right? That's how it ends in verse 10 there in chapter 2. And so when Paul confronts Peter in this moment, it's with that history of like, hey, we've talked about this. But hey, we said, you know, you gave your blessing and I submitted to your leadership and we talked this thing out back in Jerusalem. You remember that? Paul does, confront Peter head on. But I think he also confronts him from this place of humility. Like, hey, we have been over this. We've talked about this. Here's the thing. If you are not quite sure if you are entering into a conflict from a humble place, I think this is a good thing to talk out with community. Now, there's a danger here because that could very easily become gossip and just like slandering people, right? And so maybe you don't need to give all the details, but you just say, hey, like, I think I need to have this hard conversation. I'm not totally sure if I'm entering into this conversation in a good place. What do you think about my approach, how I want to say this and bring this up? And you can kind of talk that out with someone else without it becoming gossipy. So be humble. And then I think the second thing is be clear. Again, this is the area where at times I have failed, because what I do is there's some sort of alarm going off. Hopefully it's not a big deal. What I tend to do is just add more words, right? If I just say more, then people will understand. And oftentimes saying more things just makes it more convoluted. The Proverbs say, right, like where words are many, sin abounds. And I have seen that to be true in my experience at different times. I think people are handling the alarm, so we'll just power through here. I think the other reason why we sometimes struggle with being clear is because clarity can feel mean. And we don't want to be a jerk, and we don't want to be rude, but oftentimes clarity is not mean. It's super helpful to be able to say, this is not what we're going to do. This is not what it's going to look like. And even if that's an uncomfortable thing to do, it leads us to a good place. I think both Peter and Paul probably felt some discomfort, right? Probably felt some awkwardness, but that clarity allowed them to get to a place of understanding, and that's huge. So be humble, be clear, and then the last thing is be loving. Specifically here, the fancy word of the day is cruciform, which just means formed by the cross, looks like the cross. Our love needs to be sacrificial, cruciform love. How do we discern? This is what we said last Sunday, right? How do we discern between different gospels, between lesser gospels? We ask the question, which one looks the most like Jesus? And in a very similar way, in conflict, we have to ask that kind of question. What looks the most like Jesus in this conversation? Now, this is tricky too, because Jesus, this brings us back to week one, right? Jesus builds a bigger table and invites everyone to the table. Jesus also flipped over some tables. And so again, there's great discernment that goes into handling conflict and relationships. We need to know, when is the time to bring some of that Paul, Jesus flipping over tables energy, and then when is the time to maybe back off? When's the time to invite to the table to come sit down? Let's talk this out. Let's listen to each other. Let's hear each other's stories and perspectives. So the big question is, what does sacrificial cruciform love look like in the middle of this conflict? Whatever it looks like, I want you to know that it's worth it. It's worth it to fight for the mission and the health of the community. But sacrificial, cruciform love is the only way through it. So my question for you this morning is, do you need to have a good fight? Do you need to have a good fight? And what I mean by that is there a hard conversation you need to have? And maybe you've been afraid of it, avoiding it, not wanting to deal with it, for whatever reason, probably some really good reasons, but is there some conflict that you need to enter into? Can you do it humbly, but with clarity and with a cruciform love? One of the reasons why we come to the communion table every Sunday is to be reminded of what Jesus looks like. Right? His body broken and poured out for us. This is what love looks like. The Lord Jesus, on the night he was betrayed, he took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, "This is my body, which is for you. Do this, eat this in remembrance of me." In the same way, after supper, he took the cup, saying, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this whenever you drink it in remembrance of me. For whenever you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes." So as we come to the table this morning, as we remember what Jesus looks like, broken and poured out for us, is there a hard conversation you need to have? Is there a good fight you need to enter into?